Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
But my frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
What in the name of heaven is this?
What in the name of heaven is this? I almost blew the quote there. What in the name of heaven am I doing here? Me, Mike McCafferty, captain of I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, but not for a long time. The arrogance of someone where someone enjoys something you do, a performance or art or some sort of writing or something, and they enjoy it enough to spend time listening or observing or appreciating your work. And the arrogance, the indulgence of being able to walk away from that and say, I'm good. You may not be good, but I'm good. There's a parallel here, of course, and it's only been pointed out to me by a friend of the pod, fellow of the pod, Jim, who recently has been sort of pleading with me for my thoughts on Star Trek Picard Season 3. And I've been very, very busy. Now, full disclosure, I've been very, very busy. And yet, in past years, when I first started this podcast, what was I doing? I was doing nothing in the summer, but then my friend Brian Weissel asked me to be the story editor on Hot Streets in 2016, which I did. And I was going to grad school, and I still found time to do a podcast. And yet here, I let this podcast languish. I let this role languish. The arrogance, the outrageousness, the audacity. The parallel is, of course, to Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart, who was beloved by millions of people for his role of Jean-Luc Picard, eventually walked away from it. Walked away for greener pasture because he'd had enough adulation, adoration. Something else with an A. He walked away. He said, it's enough. I have been lauded enough for my role of Captain Jean-Luc Picard. And so he walks away. And so I walked away from this podcast. I am in no way as interesting as Patrick Stewart or Jean-Luc Picard. And yet I'm drawing that parallel because something drew me back to this podcast. And it is not the premiere of Strange New Worlds coming up in June, which I'm actually really, really excited about. Strange New Worlds does excite me. More than I've ever been excited before. And certainly, Picard Season 2 excited me from the opposite reason that I wanted to bury it. I wanted to destroy it. What utter garbage that was. How horrible that was. So much so that a friend of mine actually ripped into it. Ripped into it so hard on his... He has a YouTube channel, and he ripped into it so hard that one of the showrunners, I won't name any of these names, came to him and said, hey, I hear what you're saying. Come watch third season on me. And he did. And my friend came up to me and he said, you know what? It's got its flaws, but it's Star Trek. So I went into this season three of Star Trek Picard, which bears no resemblance to anything we've ever seen in Star Trek, in The Next Generation, or any of the movies outside of the name of Jean-Luc Picard. The audacity of the writers and the showrunners to take something that works, a character that works, and utterly destroy them with nonsense. This is ultimately the fault of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And it has contextualized and destroyed many a reboot. And I don't even know, as we move forward, I'm going to call this, there has to be a name for these. There has to be a name for what we're watching these days. I'm not talking about just about Star Trek. I'm talking about shows like Sex and the City or any sort of reunion show. You know, they did a season of Full House, I think. And these nostalgia-filled shows, actually, Community, Dan Harmon, Friend or Foe to Mike McCafferty, just acquaintance. They're making the movie. They put six seasons in a movie. He's finally coming back. And the nostalgia, which we feel towards that, There has to be a name for it because it's not a sequel. It's not a prequel. It's not a reboot. For this, and I'm pretty happy with myself, this is an Enterprise dequel dripping with nostalgia. So I want to get that out there before I go back on this. But the audacity of these people, because they thought they could be as wise as the execution of Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan, they could be as surprising, as unique, a show which is, you know, almost 40 years old. Well, it's over 40 years old right now, right? It's 41. My God. That movie ruined so many nostalgic trips because what it did, and maybe this is a bit of a talk about Star Trek 2, which I promised to finish up before I left this podcast, is the re-examination of an existing character that was beloved and fun and fun-loving, exciting, and recontextualizing that character as someone who was dour and sullen and reflecting upon the errors of their ways. Worked. My God, it worked. And you know what? I don't think it's ever worked again. Because every single damn time they try to pull that, excuse my language, shit, and bring forth a nostalgic character and laden them with nonsense like regret and remorse and second thoughts and mortgages and family members which we didn't know existed. It has been done nothing but dragged what we loved about that show down. Nostalgia is a tricky thing. Nostalgia is a trap. You know, my son and I were talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, The Emissary, one of my favorite Star Trek pilots, because Sisko, he lives in that nostalgia, in that pain of his wife still being alive. He lives in that. And for many of us, we try to envision ourselves going back to simpler times when we were in high school or college with our best friends. And after those good times are gone, we do everything we can. We assemble fortunes and try to get our lives and affairs together. I'm taking my friends. We're probably all going to go down to the Grand Canyon because I want to capture some of those feelings from before. I want to wring it out. And that's okay in a short period. Now, it is a dangerous drug, nostalgia, to try to use. But in limited quantities, it is wondrous, and it is what we all crave. And then the creators of Star Trek Picard decided that is actually not what we wanted. Now, I think my son has now outstripped me for his love of Star Trek. He has more Star Trek than I am, and I am happy for that. But he sent me I think it was Stephen Ira Bear who was saying that you don't give the audience what they want. You give them what they need. You never give them what they want. And I remember that when I was in my own science fiction show, The Invisible Man, and we started catering to some of the fans, early internet. And it's an Ouroboros. Actually, in The Invisible Man, there was an Ouroboros, a snake eating its own tail. You don't give them what they want. Unless it's nostalgia. Unless you're doing a show where you're going to revisit a character after 30 years, the last thing they want to see is the antithesis of that character. For two seasons, we got garbage Picard. We got a character who was so sullen, so flummoxed, so regretful, so doubtful of his own abilities. He seemed frail. He seemed old. He seemed inefficient, ineffective, surrounded by younger people. Rafi. Whoever that robot girl was, Issa Brioni, is all these characters. Rios, who would dance and dart around him in ridiculous storylines. While the one person we came to see sat in the middle and ruminated on the failures of his life. As Commander Krug says, a failure. Talking about the Genesis weapon. That career was not a failure. But they concocted a failure for it. The destruction of Romulus and his attempt to do whatever. Who cares? It's all been retconned out now anyway, hasn't it? Season 2 is gone. My God. How they destroyed Season 2 this season. If there's nothing else you can say positively about this season, it's that they wiped the slate clean of Season 2 and the Borg and the death of Q. All gone, baby. when we did get those little snatches of characters, like Riker and Deanna Troi, or Data, it was joy. It was that nostalgia that we wanted. I did a whole episode about copy that. I'll stick to making pizzas. How horrible a fate for William Riker to be stuck making pizzas for Zimzadi on a planet and not helping his best friend, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, on an adventure. How emasculating, how neutering that was. And yet, it was the best thing about that damn season. Nostalgia is a tricky drug. It is challenging because too often it becomes fan servicey. Too often, if you watch Ready Player One, all that was just a junk pile of bits and bobs from our past memories. Shows like Stranger Things dole these things out, things from the 80s, things which, oh, do you remember that? Do you want to remember that? No? Yes and no. Yes, I remember it. No, I don't want to remember it. I don't need you to force it upon me. I want to explore it on my own. And if you're going to bring a character back, your options are either to flip the character on its head or lean into the nostalgia. It is tricky, but if you can do that, you might actually get people to enjoy it. That is my preamble to Star Trek Season 3 Picard, which I went in with much trepidation. This is a total off-the-cuff review of the season. If I had to give it a grade, if I had to give the other seasons a grade, I would give a D minus, an F million percent minus, D minus for the first season, F negative Kelvin degrees for the second season. And for this season, probably a B minus. And you say, whoa, oh man, that seems kind of rough. Boy, that's even on a curve. I'm actually probably grading it up. It's probably deserved probably a C or C plus. Star Trek Picard Season 3 gives us the one thing that we want, which is Star Trek Picard. That should be the end of my podcast, right? That should be it. They are insane. And yet I'll go on. I'll expand upon that. Terry Matliss, I believe I got that name right, who used to work on Enterprise. I didn't know that until my son told me that. Did the one thing no one else dared do in Star Trek Picard, which was to give a Star Trek Picard. And he did even more than that. He gave us Star Trek Riker and Star Trek LaForge and Star Trek Data as Data, not as Noonienson. Man, when I first saw him as Noonienson or whoever the hell it was, or Lore, whoo, man, I was ready for a bunch of mishigosh. But instead, he parsed through that. He gave us Star Trek Deanna Troi. He gave us Star Trek Crusher. He also gave us Jack Crusher. Ooh, that's a tough one, team. That's a tough one. But we'll get into that a little bit. So he gave us all of these wonderful things, and he gave us the final gift, two final gifts, which was the Enterprise D. Quite the surprise, quite a delightful surprise. And then the last thing I'll talk about in a minute, which I'm sure you know about. Star Trek Picard, I to be honest, if you parse through the story, it is absolute nonsense. It is centered around a new character, Jack Crusher, with whom none of us care about. Let's just put that out there. He is a forced upon character dredged up in a sexual interlude between Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, and Beverly Crusher of indeterminate ages. Now, believe me, when he first popped up, you better believe that all my friends were reverse engineering that age. Let's see. God, he was 70 and she was 50-something. I mean, woo, man, that's a tough one. And that would have been fine if it was just his son and he was just an ordinary kid. And you know, he had a kid before, didn't he? Well, I can't remember if that kid was actually his kid or just some sort of like weird genetic clone thing or something. It doesn't matter. And he had kids in generations, right? Papa, Jean-Luc Jr., or whatever his name was, René. And he's never really shown that much of an affinity towards kids. And if it was just his son, and maybe his son was like a jackass or or maybe he was not good at his job or he was young, I would have been okay with that. But what Star Trek Picard Season 3 tries to do is make him the most important character in the universe. And it succeeds to the detriment of everything else. Everyone is predicating their decisions on saving this one character. As though it's not enough that Jean-Luc Picard has a son. No, there is something special about him. And he's being hunted throughout the galaxy by a mysterious group of weirdos in the Shrike. Not a bad spaceship design. Captained by Honey Bunny herself, Amanda Plummer. Cry havoc! Let's slip the dogs of war! You know, in Star Trek VI, Christopher Plummer had himself a blessed, wonderful time, didn't he? He just tore up the scenery. What an excellent foil to William Shatner. The two of them would work together at Stratford, Ontario, in doing Shakespeare. Rest in peace, Mr. Plummer. You know, he knew how to tear up the scenery just as effectively as William Shatner, perhaps even more so. And he went for it. Overwrought, overblown, bombastic, but it worked because he leaned into it. Maybe a little bit too much. I always thought that, he went a little bit too far at times, but Nicholas Meyer maybe pushed him. I was looking for his name, Nicholas Meyer, Harv Bennett, Nicholas Meyer, pushed him a little too far, but that's okay because it was fun. It's a movie. You can endure 2 hours of him. But eight? Amanda Plummer comes on as a character in a Wrath of Khan-like Reliant type ship, the Shrike. And she takes up all of space and all of time and all of the universe with her performance. A scarred character smoking a cigar, a scarred, cigarred character, cackling, seemingly with all the answers, stopping the Enterprise. Oh, and let us not forget, first of all, that this is even the Enterprise. I say the Enterprise, I mean the Titan. Let's call it the Titan. With one good character on it. Gosh, I'm going to stop everything. Captain Shaw. You know, in the first episode and a half, when they steal, where they commandeer the Titan because they have to get Jack and they have to get Deanna, Beverly and all that sort of stuff. Everything they do is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely against Starfleet. Absolutely against protocol. And no one calls them on it. Except for Captain Shaw, Captain Liam Shaw. And he is presented as an ultimate jackass, not Jack Crusher, an ultimate jackass, hard-assed, obstinate. He reminds me of, the captain of Star Trek III, Search for Side, Captain Esteban. Officious, by the book. And we're supposed to say, oh, well, we don't want to like him. I loved him. Why? Because everything he said was absolute truth. How dare you steal this ship away from me? How dare you commandeer us? How dare you turn my first officer against me? I was completely on board with this character, and I'm sorry that they killed him off, and I suspect he's coming back. Why? Because he was really good, and they'll find a way. But then Vadik shows up to beleaguer the Titan. And I have to say, first of all, I'm giving all of this a hard time, but I have to say the special effects this season were really, really good. They did not skimp on that. Everything looked fabulous. That space battle and the nebula looked great. Eventually, somehow, inexplicably, Riker becomes captain because Shaw gets hurt or something like that. They just wanted to make him captain. And then he becomes kind of morose because there's no other way to save the ship. And this is the end, my friend. He yells at Picard, which is so out of character. Eventually, they dispatch. Vadik has a weird. Oh, my gosh. As I'm going through all this. So the plan with the portal gun to destroy Starfleet headquarters or something like that. The stolen portal gun from the Daystrom Institute and the Shrike, which has the gun, which makes the ships go back and forth through portals, is all just preamble to get Jack Crusher. That's all it is. That's all any of this show is to get that one character. How boring is that? Now, there's no aspersions to the actor. Let me just say that. He does a fine job with what he's given, but he's not given much. He's trying to be a Han Solo rogue. He's also trying to be angry at the fact that no one told him about... I don't even know why he's angry. It's hard to understand. It's hard to grasp Picard trying to get this relationship with this adult man, this 35-year-old man who Beverly's calling his son. I mean, they say he's 21, but I think in real life, this actor is 32, and it looks it. He does not look 21. He's like the oldest-looking 21-year-old I've ever seen. My God, he could probably like drink at 15 or 12 if that's how old he looks at 21. The first four episodes of this show are basically preamble. They basically set the stage to say, hey, we got to get Jack Crusher. We get him. And then they destroy the Shrike. Actually, it goes away for a little while. There's a nefarious bad guy who we all think is the Pa Wraiths, and it should have been the Pa Wraiths. I know, I'm jumping all over the place. It doesn't matter. I'm falling through portals right now, left and right. It doesn't matter. It should have been, we were all believing it was the Pa Wraiths. His eyes glow red, just like Gul Dukat's did when he was infected with the Pa Wraiths at the end of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You know, I mean, the founders, the changelings, great to see those guys back. Who knew that the Amanda Plummer was a changeling? She had to cut off her arm to talk to the Borg Queen? No, that doesn't make any sense. It should have been the Pa Wraiths or Gul Dukat. I think, and I've been told this by a couple of people, it's quite likely that Terry Mountless got the note saying, no, the Pa Wraiths is too, it's too obscure. Make it the Borg. Everybody loves the Borg. The Borg are the Federation's greatest threat. First of all, no one loves the Borg anymore. The Borg have been so emasculated. They're the ones that should stick to making pizza. Absolutely, because they're terrible. The Borg are terrible. God, I hate how much the Borg have been just absolutely stripped of anything that was interesting 35 years ago when they first came out. Instead, it's just garbage after garbage. You know, I mean, poor Alice Krig doing the voice for this weird kind of like witch on a stick thing at the end. It was like a three-man play. When they finally get to the end of this series and she's stuck on that weird podium and then Jack's in the middle and Picard's doing it. It's like we're doing like black box theater in Los Angeles, like for Halloween or something. It should have been the Pa Wraiths because of the changelings. But even that is discarded and just sort of cast away. We get another four episodes with changelings and they're infiltrating Starfleet for something, some sort of seditious reason for Founders Day What is it? Founders Day? Federation Day? Frontier Day. Frontier Day, I believe that's what it's called. That's one of those things. Something with an F. Founders, Federations, Fleet Day. Where all the ships are going to gather. And they're all... Oh, man. What a good idea. You know, Admiral Shelby. Interlinks the ships. Man, what a bummer for her. Remember Commander Shelby? Elizabeth Dennehy? You know, my son went to school where she taught acting. And then she finally comes back to her after all these years. She was done dirty. She should have come back in some capacity because she was great in The Best of Both Worlds. She really pushed Riker. She really pushed that character. Then she's dispatched, and then she shows up for a cameo, and she gets blasted by one of her 25 and under crew members. Oh, boy. Somewhere in the writer's room, they're sitting around saying, well, okay, so if everybody's got the Borg in them... Then how do we keep our lead guys from getting the Borg in them? Hey, I got an idea. What if it's just everyone under 25? What is the old phrase? Don't trust anyone over 30. Don't trust anyone under 25 because for whatever reason they got Borg garbage in them. And they're going to walk around and talk in unison, but they're not going to have any sort of appliances because that's too expensive. We do get data back. Which is fine. There's a lot of rigmarole to get him back, which was boring to me. And we saw Moriarty, but he was just, I don't know what he was doing there. Why was he there? He's supposed to be a safeguard or something. And we get Lore, we get a little B4, and it's fine. I was honestly thinking that was going to be what we were going to get the whole time, is that Brent Spiner just like bouncing back and forth like he was in Masks, in season 7 of TNG. You seek Musaka. No. At least by the time we got to the last two episodes, we cleared all that out. We also got Geordi and his daughters, his real daughter, and then the other daughter, the acting daughter, as he's on the Starfleet Museum, which just coincidentally has every spaceship that we want to see there. And you know what? when we saw all of those ships, I was not unhappy. You don't know, wonder where that B minus comes from? It comes from a lot of that. Seeing those old ships. Not bad. We are teased then for the next four episodes about Jack and the red door. This red, terrifying door, which gives him powers to control other people without any sort of explanation. Vadic, boy, she really wanted to, when you find out. Well, what is it? Oh, better to show you. Jack Crusher. Jack. Jack Crusher. Jean-Luc Picard. Oh, my goodness. And then she got spaced. Poor Amanda Plummer. You know, her best acting was actually in episode two when Jonathan Frakes directed her. And I think he said, okay, you got this, Amanda. Just bring it down 93%. And then I think she was actually okay. But then the rest of the director's like, no, whatever you banked there, bring it on, baby. At least she got a tagline of fuck solids. And then she got obliterated and she turned into like pottery outside. And like you see her face floating outside when she's finally smashed against her own ship. The amount of preamble for this series to get to what the Red Door is and what Jack Crusher is and the fact that the great mystery is revealed. Eight episodes of sheer nonsense and spinning the plates. It's bad storytelling. And I'm not afraid to say that. I don't think I'm ever going to work on Star Trek. I'll work on other stuff, but maybe I don't need to. It's just bad storytelling. It is spinning the plates too long. And I remember as we were getting closer, I told my son and a couple of people, I said, here's the thing. No matter what it's going to be at this point in time, it's going to be disappointing because we have been promised something through 7 to 8 episodes, over 8 hours of entertainment, that there's no way it will ever be as good as what we are promised. And a lot of people thought, and I did too, it was the Pawrates after episode 7. It all made sense. And that would be kind of fun, right? Bringing in those characters. Man, those guys, they were spooky. You know, space ghosts. Space gods, yeah, let's see what they're up to, especially with the Founders and, you know, I mean, the Changelings and all that made sense. And then what was it when they finally open the Red Door? It's the Borg. It's the Borg. It's the boring Borg hiding out in Jupiter like goofball cowards needing Jack Crusher because, and let's see if I've got this right. Captain Picard did not have Irrimadi syndrome, or whatever it was, Imzadi syndrome, but instead had been given a special code in his DNA, which allowed him to contact the Borg. But then it was passed down from him to Jack, and so now the Borg need him to act as a sort of lens in which to contact all of Starfleet, whom they have been using the Changelings to secretly get their Borg nanobites into the younger generation of Starfleet in order to get Jack, which they hadn't gotten in the first place. So why would they even concoct that plan without even having your most important piece to activate that and capture about 75 spaceships and then attack Space Dock 1 and almost lose? Man, why don't we just build Space Dock 2 and then like the entire Federation fleet would be useless because they almost lost to Space Dock 1. As my friend pointed out, where were the Vulcans? Where were the Klingons? Where were the Romulans? Where was anybody? The Andorians? It's just all Starfleet? I mean, the Klingons could stop by? Okay. When that reveal finally happened, it was, of course, disappointing to, I think, pretty much everyone. As Picard or someone says, the Federation's greatest threat, and that is completely untrue because they have been defeated time and again. Time and again and again and again. The Founders were far more frightening. You know, I mean, pretty much anyone was more frightening. Even the little bug dudes who, you know, crawled in people's mouths in conspiracy. You know, they were far more, you know, far more of a threat than the Borg, who show up in a goofy cube with a bunch of TV antennas sticking out of them. eating themselves up, and she's, you know, the Borg queen sitting there on a little pedestal with her rib cage exposed. Couldn't they give her like a shirt or something like that? I mean, does she need like the rib cage? Why does she need the rib cage? Let me get to the good stuff right here. Episode 9. The last 10 minutes of episode 9 almost made the previous 29 episodes and 50 minutes worthwhile. Nostalgia. As I come back to that theme. The piece has been laid. Geordi was working at the Starfleet Museum, and then he had reassembled the Enterprise D. And the lights come on, and they go in there, and it is not CG. You know, we can trace this back. Remember Relics with Scotty? No bloody A, no bloody B, no bloody C, no bloody D. 1701. And those doors open, and a lot of it was green screen. They kind of like comped in like the background for him, but he got to sit in the chair and we got to see some of the original Enterprise. And the nostalgia carried us through. It's what we wanted. We wanted to see Scotty in that physical space just one more time. And we got it. We got to see him there. What a joy that was. And so here, 30 years later, 35 years later, the lights come on. And there, the people we've loved for more than a generation get to walk back on, not the original, but a facsimile recreation, but in the show, the Enterprise D, the place we loved watching them, the thing we wanted to see happen. The thing we dreamed would happen when it was announced it was Star Trek Picard, when Patrick Stewart says, Jean-Luc Picard will be returning. 29 episodes and 50 minutes is all it took for us to get what we wanted. And it was almost worth all those episodes. Because to see those actors and those characters step onto that carpeted floor, and I love some of the lines they have. Oh, and by the way, as an aside, Worf is spectacular in this season. He is so good. I have never thought he should have his own television show until now. He was so funny. But he's also a good comic relief, so maybe he shouldn't have his own show unless he's with someone. But when they step on there and they take their positions and they look at it all, it is that mix. In some ways, it's the exact same mix, but in the reverse of William Shatner getting back on the Enterprise and realizing this might be my fate. That first Star Trek failed and my career is shot, and now I'm relegated to being on this ship forever, and I must stare here at people in these costumes for the rest of my life, as though that's a sentence that he must pay. But here, for these people, after 35 years, being able to walk back on to that bridge, lovingly recreated, whether it's in show or out by Geordi or by the technicians who created it, by the people who built the props and the sets. It was the most golden amount of nostalgia you can ever have. I've seen it twice now, and both times tears well up in my eyes. I am not afraid to admit that. I'm not afraid to admit that's exactly what I wanted to see. And I don't think anyone else should be afraid to admit that. Because that's the promise of Star Trek Picard, is Star Trek with Picard in Star Trek. Now, the last episode was a lot of gobbledygook as well, with the Borg Queen and with Jack Crusher. And it became Star Wars, the Return of the Jedi, when they have to go into the Borg cube and they have to destroy the reactor and get out before. And it's almost a shot-for-shot thing of the Millennium Falcon getting out there. And we do get a little bit of Patrick Stewart being Jean-Luc Picard, the one who's able to save the day not with his fists or his phasers, but with his heart. It's a little heavy-handed. That's fine. I didn't mind that. But at least I got to see a little bit of that. And then we have about 19 different endings. some which are pretty good, some which are terrible. I don't need to see Star Trek Legacy on the Titan. I don't. I'm sorry. If you do, I'm happy for you. And maybe that's one of the things that I can actually live with now, is I can actually step away and say, there can be Star Treks for people who want to watch Raffi and Seven of Nine and Jack Crusher goof around in a spaceship called the Enterprise G. And that's fine. I don't need to see that. So many different endings. But the one ending that truly mattered was the one that was filled with the most nostalgia. I have always thought that if I could just watch the crew of the Enterprise D sit around and play poker for an hour, I'd be pretty happy with that. You want to spend time with your friends. As I said before, nostalgia is powerful, and the things you do to get back to those loving moments, those golden-hued moments of your life, and relive them however you can, for as briefly as you can, just to soak in those emotions and those feelings, even if they are temporary, even if they're just transposed from the original ones. The echoes are worth it. And at the end of the series of Star Trek Picard, when they all sit down and play a game of poker, I don't know what the hell, it was Rise or whatever, it was glorious. It was my second favorite part of the show. Them being on the Enterprise D, far and away, everything I wanted to see. Thank you, 30 episodes of Picard for 10 minutes. And then my bonus, my special piece of cake, cellular peptide cake with mint frosting, was watching them play cards. And you know the brilliance of Terry Mothless, I think that's his name, is that he didn't cut. He rolled credits for a good 2 minutes while they played cards. And oh my God, that's what I wanted to see. As we spun above them, as we did in All Good Things, that's all I wanted to see. I just wanted to see them back where I remembered them. Not in some weird spaceship battling weird monsters, but on the Enterprise, at a poker table, in nostalgia. And then they had a tag with Q, and well, you know, we all knew he was going to come back. That's fine. But the fact that they continue to make Jack Crusher the most important character. His trial is over. Yours is just beginning. Nope, I'm done. Summary judgment. Guilty. That's all I got. Boy, I talked for a while, didn't I? Is this what you want? Do you want me wrapping myself up in nostalgia? Of course you do. We all do. B-. B- for this season based on about 14 minutes of content. I'll take it. I got what I wanted. Wasn't perfect. Man, when they're running around, Rafi's running around on that alien planet. Ugh. But I got what I needed. I hope you got what you needed. If you're still here, thank you. I don't know what else to give you, but my heartfelt thanks for taking the time to listen to this. Maybe I'll come back and do more of these. I don't know. You know the drill. It's been over 7 years now. The 7-year voyage continues. And I guess I'll just keep on doing it until no one's listening. I'm Mike McCafferty. Still just want to talk about Star Trek.